It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Supreme Court is set to make a decision on the future of the state's Republican-drawn election maps. We hear from attorneys on both sides of this case, Clark versus Wisconsin Elections Commission, that argues the current legislative maps constitute extreme partisan gerrymanders that violate the state constitution. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Attorney Mark Gaber is Senior Director of Redistricting at the Campaign Legal Center, representing some of the challengers to Wisconsin's current legislative maps. Mark, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
The plaintiffs you represent say Wisconsin's legislative maps violate the state constitution because they are, the word is, non-contiguous. So in other words, sections of land disconnected from the rest of a voting district. Why is non-contiguous land a problem?
Well, Kate, the main reason is that the Wisconsin Constitution says that the legislative districts must consist of contiguous territory. And so when the Constitution requires something, we're supposed to follow it. And there are, by my count, 75 districts in Wisconsin of the 130-some that do not consist of contiguous territory. Some of them, there's pieces of land that are two districts away from the mainland of the district. And you know, it's been described as sort of a Swiss cheese map.
We've heard the comparison to Swiss cheese districts.
That's right.
Can you help us?
And this is completely unlike anything else, anywhere else in the country. Wisconsin's the only state that has districts that look like this. And it's a product of the legislature taking towns that neighbor cities and not putting them in the same districts, instead having districts stretch out into rural areas. And you know, seems to stem from one source, which is the most important thing to the legislature was to insulate a partisan benefit for themselves.
As you quote the Constitution talking about contiguous territory, the case in 1992 being cited in the current dispute, Wisconsin Republicans favored an interpretation known as, quote, literal contiguity. What does this interpretation mean?
Well, so, and it's interesting because they've switched their view now. They think that it should be non-contiguous, should count as contiguous. And so the question, this should be a non-controversial and simple thing. The districts are required to be made of land that all touches each other and not have detached pieces floating in other districts around it. And so then there's no impediment to drawing the districts in that way. And there's no impediment to drawing them in that way and also keeping municipalities together and joining neighboring towns that have these pieces of the cities in them with the neighboring cities. So it really furthers communities of interest and in making sure we have cohesive, sensible districts to actually just literally follow the text of the Constitution. And so it's the Prosser case you mentioned back in 1992, the federal court went a bit awry and allowed for these non-contiguous districts. And this is sort of, you know, geeking out on law things, but the federal court actually doesn't get to tell the Wisconsin Supreme Court what the Wisconsin Constitution means. And so if the federal court makes a mistake like that, it's the job of the Wisconsin Supreme Court to correct it and to say what the Wisconsin Constitution means. And its plain meaning is pretty clear. The districts can't have detached pieces.
Talking with attorney Mark Gaber, representing plaintiffs advocating for new maps in legislative elections as we look at the ongoing legal challenge before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Mark, during the oral arguments before the state Supreme Court last week, the plaintiffs said the current legislative maps violate the Constitution's separation of powers. Can you explain why?
Yeah, absolutely. So the reason we have the maps we have today is because there was an impasse between the governor, Governor Evers, and the Republicans in the legislature back after the census in 2020. And there wasn't even really an attempt to compromise. And so the legislature and its allies went to the court, to the state Supreme Court, and said, we'd like you to put the legislature's map in place. There was months of litigation. At the end of the litigation, the Supreme Court ordered into place the maps drawn by the legislature that were vetoed by the governor. And so, you know, this is sort of like Schoolhouse Rock. A bill becomes a law by being passed by the legislature and signed by the governor. And if a bill is vetoed by the governor, then it doesn't become law unless the legislature, by a two-thirds vote, votes to override that veto. That never happened. And instead, the court imposed the precise plan that the governor had vetoed. And so our Constitution has, you know, it's known as separation of powers. There's core powers of the governor, there's core powers of the legislature, and there's core powers of the judiciary. And by putting into by making law, essentially, or having the force of law through a court injunction, the very plan that the governor vetoed, the court overstepped its bounds and violated the powers of both the governor to veto legislation and of the legislature to override that veto. So it's sort of unlike anything, you know, we see anywhere else.
Justice Brian Hagedorn disputes that separation of powers argument and saying that the state Supreme Court didn't pass laws when adopting maps through its ruling in April last year. What is your response to that?
I would say that's far too technical of a reading of the powers of the branches. And you know, while it is true that the court didn't enact a statute, the maps have the force of law because of the court's injunction. You know, court orders are law. And as a result of that court order, the governor has seen his veto become meaningless. And we don't, in the law, you know, make decisions based on technicalities like that.
What about the argument, though, that the court, the Supreme Court picked a map as one of several that were submitted to it?
It did do that, but the map it picked was from the only party who didn't propose a map as part of the litigation process. And so we had one map of the many options, or of the option of the court, you know, getting an independent party to evaluate or draw maps. We had one map that everyone knew was the one that had failed the political process. And so that really should have been at the bottom of the pile of the options. But it wasn't. It was the one that the court picked.
Mark, your arguments last week before the state Supreme Court did not outline a legal argument against the maps over partisan gerrymandering. Why avoid this argument?
Well, we brought partisan gerrymandering claims as part of the case, along with the contiguity and the separation of powers claims. The court, in granting the petition, declined to hear the case on the partisan gerrymandering grounds. Mm. Part of that is there's factual. If you're trying to prove that the map was intentionally drawn in a way that was a partisan gerrymander, there's some factual questions in that. I think the court wanted to decide the more purely legal questions of contiguity and separation of powers in order to have the case move along at an appropriate speed given the election calendar. And so, the case isn't about whether, from the court's perspective, whether the maps are partisan gerrymanders. I think anyone who has read the news or knows anything in Wisconsin knows that the maps are partisan gerrymanders. But what we have asked the court to do, because of its role as a neutral judiciary body, if it gets to the point where it's putting new maps in place as a remedy for the legal violations in the case, that it should assure itself that it is not engaging in judicial partisan gerrymandering, because that would be wholly inappropriate. And that's another way in which the court, the last time it had a redistricting case, went awry by imposing the worst partisan gerrymander probably in the state's history. It's worse than it was when the legislature did it in 2011.
Mark Gaber is with the Campaign Legal Center, an attorney for the plaintiffs in the case seeking to overturn the state's legislative maps before the state Supreme Court. We hear from an attorney from the Republican-controlled legislature later in the program. Be part of the discussion at any point. Call in with a question, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As Democrats urge the state Supreme Court to overturn Republican-drawn legislative maps, we hear from attorneys on both sides of this challenge, and your thoughts are welcome. Call in with a question, share your perspective at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We hear from the attorney representing the Republican-led legislature later in the discussion. We have attorney Mark Gaber here now, Senior Director of Redistricting for the Campaign Legal Center, representing the plaintiffs. Mark, part of the plaintiff's lawsuit calls for a special election in November 2024 for state senators whose terms would otherwise expire in 2027. Is there precedent for holding special elections due to a voting maps case like this?
There is, Kate. The courts across the country, federal courts, state courts, have ordered special elections when the court has found a constitutional violation in the district. And I think the reason for that is pretty clear. Why should voters in those districts have an unconstitutionally elected representative for additional period of time when, for example, in November of 2024, all the voters in Wisconsin are going to go to the polls. The entire assembly will already be up for election. They have, you know, they only have 2-year terms. Half of the Senate will already be up for election. And so we're talking about 16 districts, Senate districts, where it's our position that once we have a constitutionally composed map, that everyone should have a fresh start under that map and elect the entire Wisconsin legislature should be elected under a constitutional map.
Let's bring in a caller, Mike in Madison. Mike, hi, go ahead.
Hi, yes. In regard to the methodology for these areas of legislation, there needs to be a neutral method of how that is accomplished. And one suggestion I might have for your guest is that the lines of latitude or longitude are set and they have to be parallel to one another in at least north, south, or east, west. And every 10 years, the party in control can decide whether it's going to be the latitude or longitude lines that are the parallel lines. But then the other two forming the other boundaries can fluctuate. And no legislative area can be disjointed. There can't be islands that then belong to it. At least that way there is some sort of a neutral method of how these are drawn, and that parties can have some control over how they're drawn when they're in power, either using latitude or longitude as their baselines of parallel.
Mike, thank you. And Mark, as you've handled cases disputing election maps across the country, what do you make of Mike's suggestion here in carving up districts with latitude and longitude?
Well, thanks, Mike, for the call. One of the difficulties in redistricting is, you know, the cities and the municipalities and the communities of interest aren't necessarily perfect squares or perfect rectangles or perfect circles. And so, you know, what we don't want to do is, in advancing what we think might be a neutral way to do something, actually end up cutting apart communities that share interests together and really share interests that go to representation at the Capitol. And so cities are, and municipalities are an example of that. And you want to make sure that we can keep those together. And that type of sort of blind geographic-based drawing will oftentimes result in those types of communities being split. And so that's really kind of the counterbalance to that type of suggestion.
In the oral arguments, Justice Rebecca Dallet asked if you would suggest someone to serve as a referee to oversee the drawing of new voting maps. What would a referee approach entail?
Well, usually what happens is in litigation like this is the parties will submit their proposed maps that fix the problem, and you'll get a range of them from the parties. And then the referee will, who's a neutral, you know, person who's been appointed by courts to do this, will look at those proposals, assess them, perhaps make changes, suggested changes to the court, and then just submit that sort of report to the court for them to decide. It helps the court, which doesn't really have you know, as much experience in these sort of technical matters as that neutral expert would have. And it provides a guarantee of independence so that we know that we're having a neutral person who has knowledge to be the one observing it.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and other Republicans are urging Wisconsin adopt a process for redrawing maps that is similar to a process used in our neighbor Iowa. A state nonpartisan office would draw new maps. What model then should Wisconsin follow to draw voting maps?
Well, you know, this obviously this case can't decide what that would be. I would say that the proposal that's come from the Speaker Voss is not actually really the Iowa proposal, and there's a lot of sort of Trojan horses in it. The what I would suggest, if I were just waving my wand and could decide how Wisconsin was going to draw its election maps, I would suggest that it adopt the approach of its neighbor Michigan instead, which you know, passed a true citizens commission where 15 randomly selected, you know, they apply, but they're then randomly selected, and then there's balance between Democrats and Republicans and nonpartisan citizens, and they all get together and have to come to some degree of consensus following strict requirements that are totally nonpartisan, that follow the Voting Rights Act and other requirements, keep communities of interest together. That's really the best approach, is to take this entirely away from the self-interested and conflicted legislators and put it into the hands of citizens. And so that's what should happen. But we're at the moment, we're a bit of away from that.
Attorney Mark Gaber with us represents plaintiffs advocating for new maps in legislative elections. As we examine the case before the state Supreme Court, you can join in with your question, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Rob in Milwaukee is here. Rob, hi, go ahead.
Following the story at the Supreme Court very closely, and my opinion is that Wisconsin is a close to 50-50 state as far as Democrat and Republican, and it's time for the legislature to reflect that. Fair maps would get us closer to a 50-50 state where we could get some more legislation that's meaningful to the citizens of Wisconsin. And thanks for taking my call.
And Rob, very quickly, as you said, you watch this case closely. What stands out to you so far?
Well, the island discussion is very clear to me. Constitution, the separate districts that are even, you know, geographically not even close. Mm-hmm. And so it's obvious and it's just common sense. And it's also the law. And if we go by the Constitution, that we should have contiguous borders.
Rob, thanks for calling in. I want to talk just a moment here as time runs out here on timing. Mark Gaber, shortly after our arguments began last week, Justice Rebecca Bradley said the legal challenge to our state's maps would not have been brought if Liberal Justice Jana Protasiewicz hadn't been elected. The lawsuit was brought one day after Protasiewicz took office. What is your response to Justice Bradley's comments on timing?
Well, it's the same as what I said in response to the question at argument, that this is about whether or not the plain meaning of the Constitution should be followed. And just a couple years ago, the court unanimously said that contiguous means touching and connected along a border. So I just really don't see this as controversial. I don't see it as partisan. It has nothing to do with the results of a judicial election. This should be an obvious, as Rob just said, this is an obvious thing. And if you, I know you're going to talk to my opposing counsel. If, you know, the argument that the legislature is putting forward about what this means, they say that contiguous territory means detached pieces of land. And I just don't think that flies by the common Wisconsiner. As I said, I'm from Rhinelander. If I went around Rhinelander and talked to folks, I don't think there's a single person who would tell me that contiguous territory means detached pieces of territory. So I just don't see it as, I just didn't see it as partisan, and it shouldn't be. This question should not be about partisanship.
Mark, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kate. I really appreciate it.
Mark Gaber is an attorney and senior director of redistricting for the Campaign Legal Center. This conversation continues ahead with the perspective of an attorney for legislative Republicans. You can join this discussion by calling in with a question. You can add your views at any point. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Democratic voters in Wisconsin seek to undo the legislative district maps drawn by Republicans. We hear from both sides of this lawsuit, Clark versus Wisconsin Elections Commission before the state Supreme Court. And you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question, share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Taylor Meehan is an attorney and partner at Consovoy McCarthy PLLC, representing the state legislature. Taylor, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
This legal challenge before the state's highest court, partially focusing on the contiguity of legislative districts. You argue our state's voting maps for legislative districts are contiguous, but you know, areas exist where land is unconnected. Why do you argue the maps fulfill the legal meaning of contiguous?
Yes, we spent lots of time at the podium last Tuesday explaining why we do think those districts are contiguous, as that word is used in Wisconsin's constitution. And the districts you see in Wisconsin today are consistent with how redistricting has always been done in the state, dating back a century or more. And one way to explain that is to talk about how these, what we call municipal islands that you see in Wisconsin's maps, have come about. And it really has not much to do with redistricting. It has to do with how cities incorporated, you know, as far back as 1856, for example, when the city of Madison incorporated in and around the existing town of Madison. And what that did is it left the town of Madison in detached pieces. In a redistricting plan back then, and also a redistricting plan today, you know, takes the town of Madison or some of these other towns that have been split up into different pieces as a result of those city incorporations and annexations, they just take those towns as they find them. And what you see when you look around the map is that the islands are just a function of keeping those towns whole. And that even if they have some islands, you know, if you look at the whole town, it does share a border with other whole towns or cities or wards next to it. And we think that's the best way to read that constitutional text. And then I'd also just emphasize the scope of the alleged problem. You know, most of these islands have zero people or 10 people or 20 people. And so the suggestion that the municipal islands are for political reasons versus just a function of, you know, Wisconsin towns and annexation and everything else, I just don't think the political motivation matches up with the facts on the ground, given how small they are.
When you say some islands, though, but is 75 non-contiguous pieces of land, is that too many? What constitutes too many islands?
Well, what we argued, you know, quite extensively on Tuesday was that we actually think the number is zero if the question is how many districts are non-contiguous. So, you know, I spent a lot of time Tuesday talking about the town of Turtle, for example, which is in and around the city of Beloit. And if you look at Assembly District 31, where the town of Turtle is included, you know, that town is contiguous to, for example, the town of Clifton, which is right next to it. And they're both included in whole in District 31. And so, you know, to fight the hypothetical or fight the premise in your question, I'd say we've got zero non-contiguous districts. And that's the way to read the text, and it's the way to understand Wisconsin's long history of municipal annexation and incorporation of new cities.
Taylor, during oral arguments last week, you told the high court that issues with non-contiguous districts could be addressed on a case-by-case basis rather than redrawing maps for the entire state. Why should this approach be considered?
Yeah, so if the court disagrees with us, you know, and we move on to some kind of remedial proceeding, hopefully after the legislature has a first pass at it, then, you know, any remedy in the case, if they disagree with our reading on contiguity, any remedy for an alleged discontiguity has to be tailored to what the claim is in the case. And it also has to be limited to who has standing to bring that claim. And so what that means is you can't redraw every single district when only some of them have municipal islands. And you can't redraw a district in Green Bay, for example, because there's a district in, or there's a petitioner in Beloit. Normally courts, you know, limit any remedy to what the alleged problem is, and only for those who are injured in the case. And one thing that's interesting about the case is, of course, there are some petitioners in and around the Madison area. There are quite a few municipal islands in Madison, in the town of Madison, town of Blooming Grove, town of Middleton, as a result of incorporation. And you can often fix those islands without going outside of Dane County, for example, if you wanted to. And it's just a way of limiting judicial remedies, as they're always limited, without sort of backdooring a statewide redraw of all of Wisconsin's legislative districts, most of which have no municipal islands or have municipal islands with zero people.
Attorney Taylor Meehan, representing the state legislature, advocating to maintain existing maps for legislative elections, the legal challenge before the state Supreme Court. You can join in. Questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Alan is here in Wisconsin Dells. Alan, hi. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. And I find the program this morning very timely and very interesting, given everything that we have going on. And I just wanted to ask the guest there what the feasibility. I'm a retired judge here in Wisconsin. I served in Columbia County as a circuit judge, and we have a hundred or so reserve judges that have retired but still work. And I happen to be a reserve judge as well, so I still do work in various counties. But my thoughts are, you know, people are getting really fed up with the partisanship that's involved. That's my idea anyway. And what would be wrong with having a commission that of sorts? And you could choose judges, or you could choose independent people, and the Republicans would have so many choices based on the leadership in the Republican in the Assembly, the Republican leadership in the Senate. And then have the governor have one person on this commission and have them try to put together a map that would be based on pretty much the constitutional requirements, as well as trying to get the votes as fairly one person, one vote. Is that feasible, or is that not something, or that the parties just would never want? Because I think that fairness is something here people are looking for.
Alan, thank you. A fairly drawn up commission, so to speak. Attorney Taylor Meehan, go ahead.
Yeah, the question's an interesting and timely one. You know, right now in the legislature, there is a bill to change how redistricting is done in Wisconsin with a commission. Certainly, if that bill passes, then that relieves the court, I would assume, of a need to rule in this case. But in terms of the court has the power to resolve the claims in the case itself, which at this time are contiguity claims and aren't necessarily how redistricting should change statewide, but instead how, you know, if the court disagrees with our arguments on the merits, how you'd resolve those contiguity issues rather than redrawing districts statewide.
Justice Brian Hagedorn asking during oral arguments last week how the court could determine when a map is too partisan. What would be your recommendation to the court?
I think I can't do it better than what we've argued in our briefs and last week. You know, both the U.S. Supreme Court and the Wisconsin Supreme Court have said that imposing partisan fairness rules is not an act of judging, but would be a political act. I think Justice Hagedorn's questions last week were getting at that, where he asked many of the advocates, you know, just how many districts that are likely to elect a Democratic candidate would be required, just how many districts that would are likely to elect a Republican candidate would be required. And, you know, that's an uncomfortable question for a court to be asking. And, you know, it's also a question that involves a fair amount of guesswork. And we don't typically think of courts as engaged in guesswork, especially when it comes to judicial remedies. And what I mean by that, for example, in Wisconsin, there's not party registration. I think an often cited Marquette poll shows that a third of Wisconsin voters identify as independents. And any court trying to decide what remedy is neutral or rebalancing politics of districts in a more neutral way is going to have to make a call about those independents and who they're likely to vote for in the future. It also, they'd have to make a call about split ticket voters, which, you know, came up last week about a voter who might vote for a Democratic candidate at the top of the ticket, but a Republican incumbent at the bottom of the ticket. And, you know, those are questions that pollsters often find themselves engaged in, but not normally questions courts are resolving. And then it also entails answering big questions about political philosophy. I think we could have a really interesting debate about whether a fair district is one that's really competitive, you know, a 50-50 district, a toss-up district, or, you know, a statewide map that with a bunch of safe districts that guarantees this many seats for likely Republican candidates and that many seats for likely Democratic candidates. But again, those are questions of political philosophy and not typically questions of judicial remedies.
Taylor Meehan is an attorney representing the Wisconsin legislature in this legal challenge to the state's Republican-drawn election maps before Wisconsin's highest court. And we heard from an attorney representing Democratic challengers earlier in the conversation. Be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. Share your comments. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Democrats urge the Wisconsin Supreme Court to overturn Republican-drawn legislative maps. We hear from attorneys arguing on both sides of this challenge to political boundaries in our state ahead of the 2024 election. Call in with a question. You can add your views at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Taylor Meehan is an attorney representing the Wisconsin legislature in this suit. Taylor, in your oral arguments before the high court last week, you referenced the 2020 post-election lawsuit, Trump versus Biden. The state Supreme Court rejected the lawsuit, arguing the existence of fraud and requesting recounts in Dana and Milwaukee counties. What bearing do you see that 2020 suit having on the current voter maps case?
Yes, so both the Trump case and the redistricting case present questions about what power a court has to unwind an election that has already occurred. And so in the redistricting case, one of the remedies the petitioners have asked for is to unwind the 2022 elections of state senators and cut short their four-year terms and have them run again in 2024. And so in the Trump case, one of the things that the court said is you can't challenge an election after the fact. You've got to do it before the fact. And we have if the same argument here. Petitioners didn't participate in the Johnson litigation before the 2022 elections. They allowed those 2022 elections of senators to come and go. And so a party now can't come in after the fact and say those elections were invalid.
In the arguments last week, attorney Rick Essenberg, president of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, argued this case could set a precedent for mid-decade redrawing of election maps. What could be problematic about that becoming legally acceptable?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, the Wisconsin Constitution tells the legislature and the court held back in the 50s that the legislature can only redistrict once every redistricting cycle, absent some kind of constitutional amendment or the like. And we think those same principles, you know, necessarily apply to courts as well. And their reliance interests at stake, you know, someone gets to know their district, candidates get to know districts they might run in. And if you have voters coming in again and again, asking for redrawn districts throughout the decade, you know, that upsets those reliance interests. It causes a lot of confusion. There's an administrative burden on elections officials to determine who's in and who's out of a district. And so for all the reasons that Wisconsin has long said the legislature only redistricts once a decade, generally speaking, if a court is required to be involved, especially in a statewide way, generally that will only happen once a decade, unless you have, you know, minor problems here and there within a district or within a few districts.
Let's take a call now. Marty in Palmyra. Marty, hi. Hi, Marty. Can you hear us? I think we're having some trouble there with Marty's line. Let's go to Tim in New Berlin. Tim, hi.
Hi. I want to make sure I heard this correctly, but earlier in the show, I believe it was stated that we are the only state in the union that has non-contiguous maps. And I believe we've never had non-contiguous maps in Wisconsin ever before in our history. Doesn't that kind of a precedent say it all? And I think there's been a debate about what contiguous means. I think we know what it means. If you say the contiguous United States, what is always meant by that is the lower 48. So I don't understand how there can be an argument about a word that has such a clear definition. And the attorney you have on now keeps talking about municipal maps. This case is not about municipal maps. It is about state legislative maps.
I want Taylor Meehan here to jump in. Taylor, go ahead.
Yeah, you're testing my memory. I do think there are a few states, these are in the briefs, which are publicly available, that have a few detached pieces in a similar way as Wisconsin's. You know, every state constitution is different. And so the constitutional text in Wisconsin is different, for example, than in California. That came up last week. But as far as the history goes, you know, we took a look at the history and we expect to take a closer look at the history. As best we can tell, I think as early as the 1930s, and perhaps even earlier, you did have what the petitioners say are non-contiguous districts, where, you know, as best we can tell in the 1930s, the town of Madison was represented by one legislator, and the city of Madison, given how much it had grown since it was incorporated, was represented by another legislator. And because the city of Madison was sort of interwoven in between the pieces of the town of Madison, those would be what that would have been a district in the 1930s that what the petitioners say today is non-contiguous. And there's more and more examples of that as you move forward in Wisconsin's history. I like the analogy to the lower 48, actually. One way of thinking about our argument is that, you know, the town of Verona and the town of Middleton are contiguous in what is Assembly District 80, in the same way that the state of Alabama is contiguous with the state of Georgia, even though not all parts of those states are touching, they do share a border, in the same way that the town of Madison the town of Middleton and the town of Verona share a border.
You told the Supreme Court last week new legislative maps should be adopted for 2026 elections at the earliest. Why wait almost 3 years to adopt new maps?
Well, there's a few reasons for that. You know, one of them is it's common across the country in redistricting cases to give the legislature the first opportunity to apply any new redistricting rules or fix any redistricting problem identified by a court. And that takes time. And one of the arguments we've made is that the legislature should have as much time to apply any new rules as the petitioners took to file their suit. You know, they waited 2 years after census data, 1 year after the last final judgment in the Johnson litigation. And so the legislature should likewise have some time to make, you know, what are inherent policy choices and how to address what the court says contiguous means if they disagree with us. And then the second reason, and even bigger reason, is that courts generally don't change election rules on the eve of election deadlines. And that's where we'd be here, potentially changing districts statewide if the case proceeds. There's significant additional proceedings, including perhaps a trial that would have to occur. And as we've argued, when you change district lines right before election deadlines commence, that causes confusion for voters and it's difficult for candidates. puts new burdens on election officials and so forth. For those reasons and for others, you know, we've argued in our papers that any remedy should wait for the 2026 elections, and that we can't rush this case to judgment given the delay.
Attorney Taylor Meehan with us represents the state legislature advocating to maintain existing maps for legislative elections. You can join in. Your questions and comments are welcome. 800-642-1234. Let's try one more time here. Marty in Palmyra. Marty, can you hear us?
I can. Can you hear me?
Indeed. Go ahead.
Okay. Purportedly, Wisconsin is a quote-unquote purple state, roughly 50-50 between Democrats and Republicans. How is it that the Republican Party is almost a supermajority in the state? And I'll listen to your response off air. Thank you.
Marty, thank you. Taylor, go ahead.
Yeah, so this came up at the end of the argument last week, and there's been a lot of, you know, political scientists with degrees, you know, greater than mine who have written on it. But inherent in single member districts is that they're not going to always reflect the proportion of voters that Democrats and Republicans get statewide. It's similar to how the Electoral College works, and the Electoral College will not always reflect the popular vote. One reason you see single member districts adopted in Wisconsin in 1848, after great debate, mind you, and in other states versus some kind of at large system, is because those single member districts can be a check on those statewide races. And they ensure that the voters from all parts of Wisconsin are represented in the legislature. So if you think about a voter in the North Woods in Wisconsin, that voter just has to convince others in her community to vote for her preferred candidate in a 50,000 some person assembly district, for example, versus convincing voters statewide. And of course, as the caller points out, the downside with single member districts in Wisconsin, but also everywhere else, be it Massachusetts or North Carolina, you name it, is that they aren't always going to reflect the statewide proportion of voters.
We have less than 30 seconds here. About Justice Janet Protasiewicz in her campaign called the state's election maps rigged. Should Justice Protasiewicz recuse herself from this case?
You know, the legislature, joined by some other parties in the case, has moved for her recusal. She denied that motion. And I just leave our arguments to what we put in our briefs. We think U.S. Supreme Court precedent requires a impartial proceeding here. And for the reasons we've said in our briefs, we'd hope she would recuse on that ground.
Taylor, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Taylor Meehan is an attorney representing the Wisconsin legislature in Clark versus Wisconsin Elections Commission. And earlier, we heard from an attorney representing Democrats in the challenge, Mark Gaber of the Campaign Legal Center. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can stream it. You can download a recording later today at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.